From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. This is, December 10th already, 2009. Wow, the year has gone by really fast. Tonight, we have Robin Sachs. You know Robin as a former DA, a commentator on television, news analyst, legal analyst, author, victims advocate, you name it. Usually, we bring on Robin at the end of the show for Nothing But the Sachs segment, but I thought I'd start out with Robin first tonight.
Okay, we're back. This is our weekly Nothing But the Sex segment with former DA, current author, television analyst, all-around good gal, Robin Sachs. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Dana.
You know, it's minus 39 degrees here with snow. You know the old story about, of course, we're on Scared Monkeys Radio, about the brass balls of a monkey freezing and falling off or something. Anyway, I saw those balls today. They were in my driveway.
Oh my Lord! Well, listen, I thought that here we're pretty wimpy here on the West Coast, and 52 degrees is I brought out my chains for my snow tires, and I'm wearing my parka. So.
Yeah, right. Well, you'd last a long time up here, but I'll switch you any time. Anyway, we're not here to talk about the weather. We can leave that to Al Roker. What's this Tiger Woods thing? You know, it went from John and Kate to now Tiger Woods. A different situation, obviously. There's some, a domestic situation alleged. There's some prescription drug usage alleged. There's some maybe some sloppy work by the police alleged. What's going on? Your thoughts on Tiger Woods?
You know, my thoughts on Tiger Woods is that we have not a lot of news going on, is really what my real thoughts are. I mean,
the fact that
we're on girlfriend counting, and now we are on mother-in-law watching, and police work analysis.
Yeah.
I just think that this is just a humongous waste of effort and time, frankly, in every which way. I mean, all of these things are not surprising. Drugs, any of these kinds of allegations don't surprise me, but they're also not really a big deal.
No.
Is this the first case of, I understand that it's Tiger Woods, but, pill popping and drinking is not exactly like a new social phenomenon that we should be spending all this time, analyzing because Tiger Woods is involved. We're analyzing it because we are a salacious society that love more than anything seeing the downfall of good people.
Yep.
That's what we like. Yep. We like to see good people crash and burn, and the more salacious that we can find in the details, the better, and we're just feeding our own hoardy appetites.
Yep, and if it bleeds, it leads, I think is what we say, and it's a tragedy for sure. And when you look at the big picture, Robin, and you're so right, as
it's
you...
It's a tragedy?
Yeah.
What kind of tragedy
No.
It's a tragedy for Ellen. Her husband is cheating on her, but it's not a tragedy.
Oh, help me, Lord. You didn't let me finish. It's a tragedy that the media is all over this story like a bird on a bug. It's a tragedy when there are so many other domestic violence cases out there. The epidemic of domestic violence, on my commentary, I talked about someone who we both know, Cherry Simpson, and her niece being stabbed to death in a domestic violence situation here just the other day, yet we've got nonstop 24/7 Tiger Woods stuff. That's the tragedy. Nah, his stuff isn't a tragedy. It's far from it.
Let me say it on your radio show that streams to millions of people across the land. Dana Pretzer, you are right, and I apologize.
No, you don't even have to do that, because the way I press.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it's really despicable. There are so many crimes of violence. People getting murdered. People not being able to afford health care. People who are out in the cold right now during this time. What about the economy? Tragedy.
Yeah. No. You're absolutely right. And it just goes to show you that the media has their heads up their butts when it comes to these sorts of stories. And they just, someone said the other day, they Nancy Grace the story. I don't agree with that term, but what they mean is, I think, is they go over it and over it and over it and over it and over it, report it to death. Anyway, let's get away from Tiger Woods and get back to Amanda Knox. We talked about this last show. Let's talk about it a little bit tonight. The family is out. You know what? If that was my daughter, too, I think I'd be making the media rounds talking about her innocence and how phony a trial it was, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. But really, when it comes right down to it, you prosecuted for a long time. You know, cases like this, there was some evidence there to convict her, or am I wrong?
Well, that's exactly. I have to tell you, because I haven't really gone into the detail, like under in the thick of this case, I can't say that I think that she's not guilty. As a matter of fact, I don't know that the result was necessarily wrong. I mean, I think that there is from the little bit, and when I say I haven't really delved into the case, is that unlike the Casey Anthony case, where the nice people in Florida, the court system provides us with copies of documents all the time and so forth, we don't have that same access for me to be able to go pour through police documents and look at the evidence so I can see all the inconsistencies and so forth. But what we do know is that there's DNA.
Yeah.
There was, you know, a motive, there was inconsistent statements, and there was admissions. So there was definitely stuff that was there. Now, does that stuff, would that here in the United States amount to stuff that would be able to prove a case or prove that a defendant committed the crime of murder beyond a reasonable doubt? That's where I feel uncomfortable. And actually, I got into an argument with our dear friend Stacey Dietrich, who says, you know, listen, it's the law of the land there. You know, Robin, stop trying to legislate what goes on in Italy. They have their constitution and their codes and their governmental process, and you know, you can't enforce our laws there. And that may be true, but you know what? The United States inserts their big head in a lot of places, and with good reason. I mean, we take a stance on genocide, we take a stance on anti-Semitism, and you know, and wars, and we get ourselves involved in all kinds of causes where we believe that there has been an injustice. And if there has been a prosecution and persecution of someone that would not have passed muster here, it definitely deserves a pause.
Yep. No, I agree with you to a point, and I agree with Stacey somewhat. But I think what's come up so much in the media is their system, their jury system, judges sitting on the jury. We're just not used to that. And some have said in their analysis, some of talking heads, so to speak, and I know you don't like that term, that we see on TV talking about it, say that's where it was so much unfair. But is it unfair to criticize their system the way that it is? Could you imagine doing your closing argument to a jury and knowing that there are two judges sitting on the jury?
Honestly, I don't really have so much of a problem with judges being on a jury, because frankly, if it was here and you have rights to peremptory challenges and there's no challenge against the judge, then the judge stays. I have bigger problems, frankly, with a trial that like goes on.
Yeah.
You know, you have 2 weeks of a trial and then you take maybe a month or two off.
Yeah.
I mean, how are you supposed to remember what happened 2 months before with a break like that in the middle of it? You know, some of the questioning style where she, Amanda Knox, was deprived some basic liberties during the time that she, where there was the inquiry done by the Italian police.
Yeah.
Those things definitely have concern, rise to concern. But I'll tell you what I really think. I think that the lesson to be learned from here is, what I don't like is that this is a student. It's not so much that this is a, you know, the Italian system, and I'm not here to bash the Italian system, but what I do feel is when a kid, even a 20-year-old kid, goes overseas as part of their education, that there should be some United States jurisdiction when they're in some sort of educational process.
Yeah.
Just as if it was the United States Army and war crimes that occurred in another country,
yep,
that there would be there is some jurisdiction for the United States courts. You know, we saw this. I mean, look at the Natalie Holloway case. This is just another example of, you know, I don't want to sit here and evaluate system for a system and country by country, which countries are good and which countries are bad. The idea is that there should be a level of protection, an additional level of protection, to ensure that our children who are going to another country to educate themselves and better their lives, that we can have the ability to be able to be a resource here in the United States for them. Otherwise, it's simply going to just discourage the education abroad. And frankly, it's such a valuable tool and learning opportunity that it would be sad to discourage kids from doing that. I wouldn't want to send my kid overseas.
No, I agree with you. And the only thing I'd like to see, and I don't know if it's possible, that someday they could maybe set up a treaty where you're convicted of a crime in another country, you have the opportunity to come back and serve the time in your own country. I know some countries do that. There's some agreements like that. Let the kid come back and serve it in the States. Let her do her time. But ever a little closer.
You should work on that, Dana.
Yeah, ever a little closer to her family. Well, you know what? Canada does do that. And, you know, we'll allow someone convicted in Canada to go serve their time in the States. I don't know why they'd want to, but they would, I guess, to be closer to their family. But anyway, Robin Sachs is here with our weekly Nothing But the Sachs segment. You know, I was checking out your webpage, by the way, robinsachs.com. I've seen you've done a lot of media lately. And some of the media that you've done, you've talked about your new book, It Happens Every Day book, and, you know, the sex crimes prosecutor and protecting your kids and all that kind of stuff. But we just never seem to see the end, Robin, of these sorts of stories. I know Knox is an older story we're just hearing the end of now, but there'll be something tomorrow and there'll be something the next day, and we'll hear about a judge, like in the case of the Washington State police officers being killed, where the judges are under fire now and the Huckabee for commuting the sentence or whatever it is that he did. How do you respond to that now, being in the media more so than in the courtroom?
Well, I think the thing that's so disheartening, and I never really realized it from the view of a prosecutor, is this level of protections vis-a-vis immunity that is so troubling. And, you know, to be honest with you, as a prosecutor, it's not that I didn't think about it because I enjoyed the benefit of immunity and I knew I could get away with whatever I wanted. I never thought about immunity. I never thought I was immune. I always felt that I was personally responsible for each and every case that I touched. My fingerprints were on it. It was mine, and I figured and assumed and felt that I had personal accountability and responsibility, and I always took that very seriously. What drives me insane is this, oh, well, there's nothing we can do attitude that seems to be than I ever could have thought. I can't believe how many cases, and you're talking about the, you know, the Huckabee and the Washington, you know, Washington State case and that awful atrocity, but so many cases, day in, day out, all across the country, all across the world, where people are like, yeah, there's not really much we can do, and then there is no recourse for the individuals to fight these atrocities. I'm dealing with a few cases here in Los Angeles where here we are in a major metropolitan city with all the resources that you can imagine in terms of, you know, modern technology. It's not like that, you know, these things aren't available, what have you. And you still have, you know, DCFS workers interviewing people late into the night and not taking kids away from parents who should be taken care of. And we have that other case, that Jalen Lewis case, where the court has allowed the abusing father to have custody and locked up the domestic violence victim mother.
Yeah.
Then you have, you know, what we saw in the Dugard case. I mean, it's case after case. And it's like, oh, clerical mistake. Oh, parole mistake. Oh, the judge screwed up. Oh, the senator screwed up. It's like, how about someone, you know, buck up, camper, and take some responsibility?
Yep, no, absolutely, you're right. Her website is robinsachs.com. Her newsletter is Sachs Facts Weekly. You see her on TV. She writes books. She's on this program and many others. Robin Sachs, thank you. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you. Looking forward to it. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Robin Sachs with our weekly Nothing But the Sachs segment. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
And we will be right back with author Diane Fanning to talk about her new book, Mommy's Little Girl. It talks about the Casey and Kaylee Anthony case, and we'll talk to Diane about that and much more here on the Dana Pretzer Show. Okay, we're back. If you followed the case, the tragic case of poor little Kaylee Anthony, her mom, Casey, allegedly Kilder is waiting trial, a case that was covered over and over and over again, not only on this show, but many other shows. In fact, my next guest, Diane Fanning, and I have talked about it, talked about her new book, Mommy's Little Girl, many times, and it's always a pleasure to have Diane on the show. Hi, Diane.
Hello, Dana.
Nice to have you back on the program. Before we get started with the Anthony case, and I want to use this parallel, of course, with all the media coverage of the case, nonstop, Nancy Grace, Greta Van Susteren, you name it, everyone covered it, and why not? It's a very interesting case. The public craves those types of cases. All you have to do is see a picture of little Kaylee Anthony, and you'll be interested in this story. And now, sadly, we're seeing the total meltdown of Tiger Woods in the media, and I'm really not all that interested in him, to be quite honest with you. It's tragic to see the whole domestic violence angle and the infidelity angle and all that sort of stuff, but there are so many cases out there that are much more important than Tiger Woods. The Anthony case, for example, I want to ask you your thoughts about the Amanda Knox case, but how, as an author, as someone who covers these stories, as someone who writes about these stories, what do you think about the media coverage about something like Tiger Woods?
I think Tiger Woods is nothing. I mean, the story is just, it's so trite.
Yeah.
And I do not know why it gets so much attention, except I guess in some ways we're a celebrity-crazed society.
Yeah.
And the media covers what the people want to hear, see, or read. So that's the only thing that makes sense to me. And all these people are expressing a lot of shock over this, but I did not think that Tiger Woods was particularly sensitive towards women.
No.
Or had a lot of respect for him when he went ahead and played at that golf course that wouldn't allow women.
Yeah, no, exactly. And okay, cover the story, you know, for a day, maybe two. But now it just has gone on and on and on and on and on, and it's to the point now where it's just absolutely completely sickening. Now, another case, a high-profile case in the news, we heard a lot about it initially. We didn't hear much about it after, was this Amanda Knox case. I think that's a case that even a Diane Fanning-type author would look at. That there's a story to tell. What do you think about that, her conviction in Italy?
Well, for one thing, I think the big shock is, as much as we complain about the justice system in this country,
mm-hmm.
when we start comparing it against what is present in some other countries, our system, although definitely not flawless, looks a lot better. I just am amazed that it's an assumption of guilt just because you're arrested and charged.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed that the defense could not bring up experts to testify about the forensic evidence and why it should be questionable during the trial, but that had to wait for an appeal. Well, if a person is not guilty and it's got to wait for appeal, that means a person who didn't commit a crime is in jail even longer. And it doesn't... It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, the system seems to be kind of asked backwards. You're guilty until you're proven innocent. And as some of us hardliners would say, hey, that's not too bad. And when you look at this whole case, and we've analyzed it here on the program many times, there is definitely some evidence against her. The system itself over there is up to question. I don't think it's a story that will go away anytime soon, but it is a fascinating story. You know, I had a guest on earlier that paralleled it a little bit to Natalie Holloway. Not quite the same. Obviously, there isn't a missing girl and a family that's been shut down by a country. A country's incompetence like Aruba. But in this case, here you have a family that has gone public now, Diane Fanning, saying that, you know, our daughter's innocent. I'd probably do the same thing if it was my kid, but I'm not sure they're going to get the same response as everybody else because there was some, you know, certainly some dirty deeds going on there.
Well, you know, there's a couple of things that trouble me about this individual case. And one of them is that although, you know, she didn't exhibit the kind of behavior that one would expect after a tragedy like that.
Right.
She is a late adolescent, so I don't know if you can read that much into it.
Mm.
And beyond that, the evidence that there is questionable. The DNA samples that are found were destroyed when they were tested, and it just, there were just things about that DNA evidence. It didn't make sense to me. The guy that got 30 years for killing the victim, his DNA was all over that room.
Yeah.
And you couldn't find any of Amanda's, and her boyfriend's was just in one place, which if he'd been in the house a lot, it could have shown up there just inadvertently, or it could have been bad testing. There's no way to tell since what was there has been destroyed. And the other thing that bothers me is the prosecutor. I don't think that a prosecutor who's under indictment for misconduct in office should be in charge of something like this.
Yeah.
I mean, there was another author, and I can't recall his name. Maybe you'll be able to think of him. But he was there covering another case about the monster of Florence.
Right.
And he fled there with his family because that prosecutor was making mumblings like they might arrest him for something. This guy isn't right. And to have him in charge of any case, let alone something this serious, just baffles me.
Yeah, it's crazy for sure, and thus the parallels between Italy and Aruba when it comes down to this. It's something that we all sit back and scratch our heads about, but we'll see. That story is far from over. Diane Fanning's here. We're going to want to talk about her new book now, Mummy's Little Girl. Again, a case covered from A to Z many, many times. Even my program, I've talked to everyone involved almost, except Casey herself. What I thought I would do with you, Diane, is talk about the book, obviously, and then I'm going to kind of play a Q&A with you here. I'll throw a name out to you, and I'll get your thoughts about that character in this story. I shouldn't say character because the story is far from over, and I guess that's my first question to you. When this story is far from over, will we see a Mummy's Little Girl epilogue or a part two or whatever?
You know, that's all up to the publisher. I have, virtually no say in that. And, the timing of the book, all that stuff is in the publisher's hands. I imagine someone of Ann Rule's caliber has more sway with the publisher than the rest of us. But these are publisher's decisions. Mm-hmm. You look at the cover, and I've gotten criticized because of it says 8 pages of alarming photographs. Well, I didn't write that. If it's on the cover, I didn't write it. And that's true for almost every cover you ever find.
Right.
I think that, there's too much hyperbole in a lot of the covers, but, I'm not a marketing genius and I'm not a publisher.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to trust your publisher to do what's right.
Well, that's interesting, though, because this whole story, and with Florida the way that it is, we've seen all sorts of and heard all sorts of shocking things. But really, Diane, I think there's quite a bit that we haven't heard of, and it's going to come out in trial. Or am I wrong?
There might be. I don't think there's going to be anything earth-shattering. I think we've already seen the earth-shattering stuff.
Yeah.
But, we also don't know if there ever will be a trial. Like one of the books I wrote.
Good point.
The day that the jury was sitting in the room waiting to find out, not the jury, but the jury, the people that were summoned for jury duty, were waiting in the room to find out if they were going to be able to serve on the jury, a plea bargain came up and there was no trial.
Yeah.
So you never know when that could happen. When the death penalty is on the table, I think it's more likely than not.
Yeah, you know what? You're so right, and that takes me back to, and I've commented on this before, in fact, I think I was interviewing Cyril Wecht at the time, when Casey Anthony's lawyer, Jose Baez, was on Geraldo's show. Geraldo, who sometimes I like, sometimes I don't, asked a very good question. He said, will you try and get a deal for your client and get the death penalty off the table? And instead of him saying, like most lawyers would say, my client's innocent, we'll let the courts decide, blah, 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 on TV, he looked at Geraldo, and I'm paraphrasing here, and said, I guess that will be up to her. And in my mind, that said a lot.
Yes. Yes, it did. And he is the things he says about his client, I think a lot of times are inadvertently revealing.
Yes.
And he is not real experienced at this sort of thing, and he does not seem to be the type of man that takes advice well.
Tell us about the book. Obviously, you want people to buy it and read it, but give us 30 seconds on what we will see when we buy Mommy's Little Girl. And by the way, there's a link at Diane's webpage, dianefanning.com, or just go to Amazon or one of those places. You'll be able to pick up the book real quick.
Yes, and on my website, you can read the first chapter if you'd like to. Huh. And a lot of what I did was take the thousands and thousands of pages of documents and put them all together in a chronological way, which they certainly didn't come out that way. Some of the way it was released was rather confusing, and there were mistakes in some of the things that were said during questioning that was revealed at a later point. And so it was all, it was a very major task just to do that. Then I did do some interviewing and went to the area and got my impressions of people and places and things and put all of that together and all of that flavor. I analyzed the forensic evidence and reached a conclusion about how it happened. Which, to this point, nothing has been released that would say that it isn't so. And I also consulted with some forensic psychologists and psychiatrists and drew up in my afterword of the book sort of analysis of where she might be in the spectrum of personality disorders.
If you were to sit down and interview Casey Anthony, and knowing the case as well as anyone, the pathological, I almost said chronological, you know, that would fit too, the pathological liar that she is, and you were to ask her one question, of course we would all say, well, that's easy, I'd ask her if you did it. I'm not asking you to do a Barbara Walters and say, like the Katharine Hepburn, if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be? What kind of question would you ask her, Diane?
You know, that would be, I think asking her, did you do it, would be just asking her to lie.
Yeah.
I guess I would ask her that if she got acquitted, what were her plans for the future?
That's a good question. What's going to be, she's a young girl, she's got her whole life ahead of her, what's for the future? Author Diane
Fanning. And what she says there might reveal a lot about what's going on in her head.
Oh, absolutely. Author Diane Fanning is here. We're talking about her new book, Mommy's Little Girl. Diane, I'd like you to stick around. We're just going to take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to play the kind of a word game with Diane. I'm going to ask her a name, and I'm going to get her to give her thoughts about the character in the Casey or Kaylee Anthony case. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. Author Diane Fanning is here. Her new book is called Mommy's Little Girl. Of course, that's about the Kaylee and Casey Anthony case. Welcome back, Diane. You're working on a new project, aren't you?
Yes, I'm working on a book about accused Black Widow Betty Newmar. She's the woman that was arrested last year at the age of 76 for the murder of the fourth of her five dead husbands.
Yeah. That's going to be quite a story for sure. Let's get back to Mommy's Little Girl. And what I thought I would do is I'll throw some names out to you and give you my thoughts, and you give me yours. Of course, let's start with the ever-present Casey Anthony. You look at Casey Anthony, pretty young girl, probably had the whole world going for her when she was growing up, and all of a sudden you see narcissistic trends, lying, cheating, you name it, sponging off her parents, a child without a, who's the real father sort of situation, one of these I don't know what you call them. It's just a sad, pathetic life. Your thoughts on Casey Anthony?
I think Casey is a malignant narcissist.
Yeah.
Which is, Otto Kernberg defined that phrase. And it's someone that is in between, on the scale, it's in between someone with narcissistic personality disorder and someone who's a full-blown psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
I don't put her all the way up on the end of the scale because although I do believe she murdered her child, which is a truly horrendous crime, I do not think that she got pleasure from the killing itself. She got pleasure from having the burden out of her life, but, you know, the actual killing, I don't think, gave her pleasure. I think she's just a spoiled brat who just developed that way. It was probably a combination of genetics and environment.
You know, that gets me to the next question. And when you mentioned genetics, let's talk about Cindy Anthony. I interviewed Cindy, spoke to her on the phone many times. Certainly a different person speaking to on the phone and interviewing than what we saw later on in the case. I guess you could say Casey was a chip off the old block when it came to Cindy Anthony. Your thoughts?
Well, I don't think Cindy is as bad as Casey. I do think Cindy is a narcissist. And I just think that, you know, Casey took some of that personality situation and just became someone who was even worse.
Yeah.
I felt a lot of pity for Cindy Anthony initially.
I did too.
I felt very sorry for her and for the situation she was in. But then when I found out about the hairbrush and how she intentionally gave the police the wrong hairbrush, all my empathy for her as a mother and grandmother disappeared.
You know, you want to protect your children, but you also want to know the truth. And when you allegedly purposely obstruct things like that. You know, when I talk to Cindy Anthony many times, I agree with you. You're spot on. I found her to be very sincere, very emotional, concerned, wanting to know the truth, find her granddaughter, et cetera, et cetera. And then later on, as time went on, wow, you know, it just switched. Now, another person, of course, George Anthony, I never interviewed him on air, but I spoke to him on the phone several times. I found George to be very nice. I had a nice conversation with him. I felt a lot of sympathy for George Anthony. But then as time went on, I found him, my sympathy turned to pity, turned to disgust, and it just went south from there. Your thoughts on George?
Well, I think George, he saw the truth, and and when Cindy saw the truth, she tried to find a way to cover it up, and she didn't want the truth anymore because she knew where it led. George, on the other hand, seemed to be following Cindy's lead, and when it became emotionally too draining, he ran away from home and contemplated suicide.
Yeah.
And I do have more empathy for him, but I really wish that he had a willingness to stand up on principle, to stand up and display some character, and to stand up and demand justice for Kaylee.
Yeah.
And I am very, very disappointed in him for not doing that, for instead wanting to just do whatever Cindy told him to do.
Yeah, you know, well, there's a term that I can use on air, but we have a family show here, and I won't use it for when it comes to when it comes to George. You could probably figure it out. Author Diane Fanning's here, and we're talking about her new book, Mommy's Little Girl. Of course, that's about the Anthony case. Lee Anthony, someone who flew under the radar somewhat initially, who has since disappeared, more or less, but knows a whole heck of a lot, in my opinion, more than what he is saying. And I think he can probably, or could probably, blow the lid right off this case. Or am I wrong?
You know, I think he probably does know one heck of a lot. I mean, there's some people that think that he was the person that called Dominic Casey and told him where to look for the body. And maybe he did, and we just don't know. But he, I was bothered by some of his attitude early on, you know, when people left little memorial gifts. You know, he's going over, kicking them, ripping it apart. And, you know, there's an arrogance in him that I don't like.
And that pretty much hits a nail on the head when it comes to Lee Anthony. And, yeah, you know, I would love to sit down and interview Lee Anthony and try to get the truth from him, because he just rubs me the wrong way, and I think he knows a whole heck of a lot more than what he's saying. But
you got a glimpse of how much he does know in that taped conversation he had in the car,
mm-hmm.
you know, with Casey's boyfriend. And you realize that there was a lot there. I mean, he wasn't even being completely open there and wasn't aware that it was being taped. So, you know, he's a little weaselly.
That's a good term for him. Diane Fanny and I are playing 20 questions, or I don't know, something like that, when it comes to the Anthony case. Another person who I found to be quite interesting the three or four times I interviewed him, and then it turned out to be more of a sideshow with poor Leonard, is Leonard Padilla. Your thoughts on Leonard?
You know, I think Leonard is a pretty sincere guy.
Yep.
And you know, I think he really did. When he first came in to get Casey out of jail, I think he honestly believed that Kaylee was alive and that either Casey was being railroaded or that she'd done something stupid like give the kid to somebody to tuck away so she could get back at her mother. And you know, I really thought that, you know, he believed he was on the side of the angels. And, you know, I think all along he was trying to do what he thought was best,
mm-hmm.
and get publicity for himself at the same time. I mean,
yep.
there is that. But still, you know, I don't see him as the bad guy.
Nope.
I do find him very interesting. And when you talk to him, no matter how skeptical you are of him, he comes off rather likable.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he's a character,
yep.
But, you know. The fact that he walked away from the situation, you know, when he was talking to Casey, I mean, he just didn't want to even talk to her. She wasn't going to be honest with him. I mean, that says a lot.
Oh, no. And you know what? I agree with that. It, and even when I did get after him, I told him many times off air, I said, I may not agree with what you're saying, but I'll sit down and have a beer with you anytime, because that's just the kind of guy he is. And I believe he was initially sincere, and right down to the end he was sincere. Maybe the PR got to him a little bit. I don't know. That's just my opinion. But it certainly has made an interesting chapter in this story. As someone who I'm very fond of and very fond of his work, who got caught up in this, and got vilified somewhat, and Diane, you and I both know there's only one person really who is to blame in this situation, and the courts will decide if that person should be found guilty or not. So we can't blame Leonard Padilla, and we certainly can't blame the meter reader, or we can't blame who I'm going to ask you about right now, Tim Miller.
Oh, Tim Miller. I mean, I'm a Texan, you know?
Yeah.
So that makes me a little biased, but you know, he goes on our All Saints list.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So you know, I think he just called it. It was such a mess in Orlando when you had he's so used to working with families who were trying to get him to do everything. We don't care, you know, find a body, whatever. We just want our baby back. You know, he's used to working under those circumstances, not under circumstances where the grandparents of the missing grandchild are like bad mouthing him and giving him a hard time and harassing the people on the searchers on the bus when they go driving by. It was just crazy in my mind the way he was treated. You know, he is an honorable man. He is a father who lost a daughter. And he's a hero in my book, and any black marks down there had, I think, more to do with the situation, the chaos of it, and the craziness of it, than it had anything at all to do with Tim Miller.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and to use him as a scapegoat was, and even the meter reader, you know, that whole the speculation about him and all the craziness that's come out about him was just unbelievable. And let's end up with the Kronk, the meter reader. Here's a guy that's, I don't know, you know, it's beyond words to try and explain him and what he got caught up in.
Well, you know, poor slob is the two words I use for him. You know, I don't know why everybody thinks it's so suspicious. Well, not everybody, but some people think it's so suspicious that he was looking in that spot. I'd never been to that area, yeah. But I look at a map and I see, you know, here you got the houses and you got a forest, and that's the closest place to hide a body to the Anthony home. Okay, looks right to me. I mean, of most killers operate within a field, an area where they're comfortable in. And so this was an area that Casey knew. This is an area that was close by. And so it only seemed logical to me that Kronk would have zoned in on that spot and said, okay, I'm going to be the big hero, and this is where the body's going to be. I'm just sure of it. And I think that's how he fell into this trap. And then he hit that idiot deputy who was too lazy and too caught up in, you know, what he was having for lunch that day, I think, to worry about, you know, checking out the fact that Kaylee could be in there.
Yeah. No, that's so true. And the deputy blew it, that's for sure. And, you know, again, we can place blame, we can speculate, we can say what we want, but when it comes right down to it, there's only one person responsible, and a court will make that determination, and ultimately the man upstairs, and I'm not talking about the guy that lives in the apartment above yours or mine, will make that determination. It's the big guy that will decide.
Well, you know, Dan, as some people say, you know, well, we can't say what we feel, she hasn't been to court and everything,
yeah.
But you know what I think? I mean, we're not even possibly in the jury pool. I mean, we don't live in that county. Nobody, we don't even live in the state. So there's no possibility whatsoever that we're going to be called up for jury duty.
Yep.
So you know what? We're Americans, and we're entitled to our opinion. Well, you're not, you're Canadian, but yeah, I'm sure you have the same kind of thing. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion,
yep.
And you're entitled to express it. And I think that the evidence is, in this case, is so overwhelming. That it could have been no one but Casey that killed Kaylee.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Diane Fanning, her new book, Mommy's Little Girl. Check out her webpage at www.dianefanning.com. Thank you, Diane. You're always welcome here.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we had planned on bringing on Wendy Murphy tonight to talk about Amanda Knox, but Wendy Murphy is not available this evening, so I want to just spend the last 10 minutes of the program with you and I, and I want to talk about something that I discussed in today's commentary, and I want to share a little bit with it with you. A close friend of the program, Cherry Simpson, lost a niece the other day as a result of a domestic violence incident. Lacey Gaines became a victim. She lost her life, and she died. She was a victim of a stabbing. Domestic violence is a tragedy. It's an epidemic in North America. I'll share some statistics with you. You know, in the workplace. Let's talk about the workplace for a second, because domestic violence can happen there too. According to the American Institute of Domestic Violence, the health-related costs of rape, physical assault, stalking, and homicide by intimate partners exceeded $5.8 billion each year. Of this total, nearly $4.1 billion is for victims requiring direct medical and mental health care services. Lost productivity and earnings due to intimate partner violence accounts for almost $1.8 billion a year. These are just workplace incidents. Intimate partner violence victims lose nearly 8 million days of work a year, the equivalent of more than 32,000 full-time jobs and nearly 5.6 million days of household productivity. The human factor, 85 to 95% of all domestic victim violence victims are female. And that's always a question. It's something that comes up, but you got to look at the facts, because some people say, well, it's not just guys. A girl, certainly, women can be aggressors in domestic violence, but the stats don't lie. 85 to 95% of all domestic violence victims are female. Over 500,000 women are stalked by an intimate partner each year. 5.3 million women are abused each year. 1,232 women are killed each year by an intimate partner. Domestic violence is the leading cause of injury to women. Women are more likely to be attacked by someone they know rather than a stranger. Okay, and it's just, you know, it's heartbreaking, and it certainly can hit at home. You know, look, poor Cherry Simpson. When you look at the wide open stats when it comes to domestic violence, I'd shared with you some workplace ones. According to the Stalking Resource Center, 1,006,970 women are stalked annually in the United States. 1 in 12 women and 1 in 45 men will be stalked in their lifetime. 77% of female and 64% of male victims know their stalkers. Almost 3.5 million violent crimes committed against family members. 49% of these crimes are committed against spouses. 84% of spouse abuse victims were females. 86% of victims of dating partners were abused were female. Males were 83% of spouse murderers and 75% of dating partner murders. So it goes on and on. I can read statistics to you all day, but the big picture is, and Cherry Simpson, someone whose own daughter was a victim of a terrible domestic violence situation. We've talked about it many times on the program here, a failure in the system, you name it. And now her niece loses her life in a situation, a stabbing situation. It just shows you that it's an epidemic. We have cowardly judges that let these animals back out on the street. We have judges and politicians who are scared to implement mandatory minimum sentences. We have people who aren't doing their time. You know, like the old show Beretta used to say, if you do the crime, you should do the time. But they're not doing it. And they're allowed to go back on the street, and they're allowed to kill their spouse. They're allowed to kill their partner. Domestic violence is an epidemic. It's a tragedy. And our thoughts and prayers here from Scared Monkeys Go Radio go out to Cherry Simpson and her niece's family and friends and everyone involved, and not just them. Anyone who is a victim of domestic violence, or who has a friend who's a victim of domestic violence, or knows who someone who seems to be maybe a victim of domestic violence, do something about it. Stand up. Call the police. Call for help. Call a shelter. Call someone who's an advocate. Susan Murphy Milano types that we have on here and others. We cover it all the time. When you do that, when you stand up and you say enough is enough when it comes to domestic violence, maybe we can prevent one. Robin Sachs talks about missed opportunities. You know, you could say, well, I could have, or I should have, or maybe we could have, or maybe we should have. Why not just do it, and maybe the life you save will be someone that you know. That's it. That's tonight's show. I'm Dana Pretzer. I hope you enjoyed it. Our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. We'll see you again real soon.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.